Zizou. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I am Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit in Baku, Azerbaijan. In a room behind us, a people's plenary is underway called Pay Up, Stand Up, Finance Climate Action, Not Genocide, where civil society just unfurled the names of Palestinians who've been killed and prayed for the dead. As the summit is set to wrap Friday for a climate finance deal, a new draft of a possible deal has been submitted and is being condemned by both rich and poor countries. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres spoke here earlier today.
From now on, what matters is not what was the initial position of each party. What now matters is how to find a compromise that allows for an ambitious result in relation to the new global goal, because finance is in the center of this COP, but at the same time to take into account the concerns of all other countries in relation to the different aspects that are relevant for the future of our battle against climate change.
That's the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Among the major issues is the absence of a firm number in the draft text on how much rich countries will pay. Poorer nations bearing the brunt of the climate crisis say at least $1.3 trillion a year is needed. For more, we're joined here in Baku by two guests. Harjit Singh is the Global Engagement Director with the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty. He's co-founder of Satat Sampada, a social impact organization. He's based in New Delhi, India. We are also joined by Fiona Harvey. She is the longtime environment editor at The Guardian, and it's not easy to pin her down for an interview. So we're thrilled you're here with us right now. There is a lot of noise in the background. The People's Plenary has just gotten out. We hear them talking, although many have put tape over their mouths that say pay up. We'll speak to some of them in a little while. But Fiona, it's really hard to navigate through everything that happens at these UN climate summits, maybe partly purposely so people can't follow. But today the issue is finance. And if you in lay terms can break it down for us, what exactly was the statement that was released this morning? What document was released? And what has been the response of the wealthy nations and the poorer nations?
So we're here to negotiate a global settlement on climate finance, which is all about getting the funds that the poor world needs in order to cut greenhouse gas emissions, shift to a low-carbon economy, and adapt to the impacts of extreme weather driven by the climate crisis. This is incredibly important. This is the future of these countries depends on getting this finance. And what they're demanding is about $1 trillion a year. Now, that sounds like a lot of money. It's actually not a great deal of money when you put it in context. It's about 1% of the global economy. And it's really a sum of money that is eminently findable. You know, we already spend, as a world, we spend about $3 trillion a year on energy, about two-thirds of it on clean energy, a third on fossil fuels. So $1 trillion a year may sound like a lot, but it's actually doable. What's happened today is that we've got a draft text of what should become an agreement to get this money from the rich to the poor. Unfortunately, this draft text is not great. It doesn't actually have the key numbers in there. And it also, it's got various kind of clauses and things in there that a lot of people are unhappy with. Now, everyone seems to be unhappy with this text. It's not just developed or developing countries. It's pretty much everyone. I think we need to kind of view it as maybe a first attempt by the presidency, because they're going to come up with another later today, maybe tomorrow morning, effectively, whereas hopefully some of these problems are resolved and hopefully we get some of the key numbers in there.
Could you explain, even within that, Fiona, the question of finance, how much of that finance, in terms of the negotiations so far, are being considered loans or grants?
Okay, so if you look at the $1 trillion a year, we need to get some of that money should come from directly from developed countries, but a lot of that money is going to come indirectly in other ways, and some of it will probably need to come from the private sector. Now that's controversial for some countries. There are some developing countries who say we don't want the money to come from the private sector, but in effect, that's really going to be necessary to get to the $1 trillion mark, because developed countries who are here are not going to agree to hand over $1 trillion a year among them. That's not going to happen. So what developed countries are likely to agree is probably something like maybe a tripling of the current amount of climate finance, which is $100 billion. So that could be something like $300 billion a year. And some of that would come directly from developed countries. Some of it would come through multilateral development banks. And then the rest of the money, some of it would come from the private sector, and some of it could come from new sources of finance, like new taxes on fossil fuels, wealth taxes, taxes on frequent flying, and so on. There are lots of potential sources of money out there that really haven't been tapped yet.
And could you talk about, because the COP presidency has also come under criticism for not doing enough to make sure that an agreement was reached, and minimally, as you said, the draft agreement that's been released doesn't even have a number, much less a good one or a bad one. What role does the COP presidency play in enabling this negotiation and making sure some kind of agreement is reached?
Well, we are now at a crunch moment. This is the absolute test of this COP presidency. Is this going to be a successful COP or not? It's in the hands of the presidency now. And so the presidency has got to take this text, which has been slammed and shot down by pretty much everyone, go away, start again, and come up with a text that works. So hopefully now what they're doing is in the back rooms of this conference, engaging in shuttle diplomacy, talking to all of the parties, getting their concerns, getting their feelings, and, you know, pushing and being firm with people where necessary. What they will want to see is a good number from developed countries. What developed countries want to see is also a broadening of the contributor base, because at the moment you have a lot of countries who have big economies and big greenhouse gas emissions, but they don't contribute to climate finance. So that's countries like China, for instance, second biggest economy in the world, first biggest emitter by a really long way, and they don't actually do climate finance in the same way that developed countries do. They do some South-South cooperation, but it's very hard to judge. So if China were able to kind of flesh that out a bit more, that might work. There are also a lot of countries who are making a great deal of money from fossil fuels, and they don't pay into climate finance. Talking about Saudi Arabia here, talking about Qatar and United Arab Emirates, there are countries like that, petrostates effectively, who make their money from selling stuff that creates the problem we're here to solve.
Speaking of which, when we're talking about petrostates, that's exactly where this UN COP, COP29, is taking place. It's taking place in Baku, Azerbaijan, leading petrostate, the first, I believe, oil-exporting country in the world. And I'm wondering about the significance of this. I mean, we, outside civil society, many climate justice activists and journalists have been arrested in the lead-up to the COP, who expose oil and gas deals and corruption, leading economists, six journalists with an independent media outlet. And you also have here Global Witness exposing, acting like they were an oil dealer, and calling up one of the heads of the in the COP presidency and saying, we'd like to make a deal with you. Before you leave us, Fiona, if you can talk about the significance. Last year it was in UAE, a petrostate. The head of it was the head of the the national oil company. And this year, the repression on the outside and the deals that are being made on the inside, the largest delegation is the delegation of oil lobbyists from around the world.
It's a really big issue at COPs, and the role of fossil fuel lobbyists here is terribly problematic. It's why some very prominent people have been calling here for reform of the COP process so that this can't happen. They want there to be more control over who's allowed to be the president of a COP so that it couldn't be necessarily an oil state in future unless that oil state really agrees to actually take action and to agree to phase out fossil fuels and set out a credible pathway towards that. If an oil state were to do that, then I'm sure they'd be welcomed by very many people. So, yes, it's a problem. On the other hand, the strength of this COP is that it is global. It's every country in the world comes here. Every country is entitled to have an equal say. And that's really, really important because it means that the poorest countries can come here and confront the richest countries who are causing the problem. So, you want to make this COP as open as possible. And to some extent, that means you have to make it open to petrostates, problematic though that is. So that's a problem that everyone here is still wrestling with.
I guess the question is, if only it was as open to civil society. Fiona, we want to thank you for being with us. We have to take another break, and then we're going to be joined by a leading Indian climate justice activist, Fiona Harvey, longtime environment editor at The Guardian newspaper. Harjit Singh will be joining us as he sits right here. There is a lot happening. People's plenary just opened up. Many people gathering around, even where we are. And we're going to talk to some of the activists who just came out of that plenary. Stay with us. Azerbaijani musician Fagana. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit in Baku, Azerbaijan. Joined for more on the latest by Harjit Singh, Global Engagement Director with the Fossil Fuel Nonproliferation Treaty, co-founder of Satat Sampada Social Impact Group. He's from New Delhi, India. How much effect can you have here, Harjit? You've been to many of these COPs. They are getting outside, in civil society, more and more repressive. Last year in the UAE, here, both from outside the pressure of the state, but even inside, we have many people here, we're going to talk to them in a few minutes, who have been wearing tape over their mouths that say pay up. Your response to what's being released at this point and what you want to see happen. You're wearing your lanyard says pay up $5 trillion.
That's exactly what we need, and this is what civil society movement has been demanding, because that's the money rich countries owe to developing countries for all the injustices that they have done to people around the world, particularly in the developing world, and you look at the climate crisis that we are facing. And I must say, this is to me, the most important COP where finance has to be delivered. Because we got Paris Agreement, the reality is that developing countries have put some ambitious plans on the table, be it transitioning away from fossil fuels or protecting their people from climate impacts. But there is no money available. And can you imagine that after spending 3 years to agree on a new climate finance goal, we have had 14 meetings, several ministerials, and yet we have not seen any number coming from rich countries, and we have already spent 11 days here. At the penultimate day, rich countries are not revealing what commitment they are making to provide to this new climate finance goal, which is going to replace the $100 billion, which was quite a sham because what they provided was largely loans. So nothing is going to move if we do not get an ambitious new climate finance goal, which must be in trillions of dollars annually.
So Harjeet, I want to ask you, I mean, you're the head of this the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty and a global engagement director for this treaty. What about the agreement that was reached last year at COP28 in Dubai, where commitments were made, or at least there was phrasing, to transition away from fossil fuels? There's been an enormous amount of opposition to that in this year's meeting, including from countries like Saudi Arabia and even Bolivia. So where do those negotiations stand?
I mean, what happened at COP28, and we all were there, it was historic. It wasn't perfect, but for the first time after 30 years, we could manage to get fossil fuels in a climate agreement and agreeing to transition away from fossil fuels. Of course, it was not perfect because we had several what we call dangerous distractions or false solutions in the form of offsets and removals, and even talking about nuclear, that wasn't perfect. But at the same time, that was a step forward. And here we have been struggling to get that on the agenda. The reality is that developed countries are trying to pose themselves as climate leaders. They want a conversation on that, but back home, they are expanding fossil fuels. We all know countries like the US, UK, Norway, Canada, and Australia are going to be responsible for fossil fuel expansion between now and 2050. That's more than 50% of the plans that they have put forward. That's the reality. And the hypocrisy is they want a discussion on it, but they don't want to act upon it back home. And without providing any finance, they want developing countries like Colombia or Timor-Leste to move away from it. So the core of the issue remains finance. Unless money is put on the table, the transitioning away from fossil fuels is not going to be a reality in developing countries.
And so if you could explain already how much of, I mean, you know, the Global South countries carry an enormous amount of debt. How much debt has been accumulated by developing countries or Global South countries that is through climate financing already?
Well, the
because they're loans and not
exactly
grants, as
the
said.
Number that rich countries claim to provide this time is about $112 billion, and their own admission is that 69% of that is loans. So imagine that they are actually increasing the loans on developing countries, adding to the debt crisis that they are already facing. And even now, the conversation is that most of the money that's going to be provided as part of the new climate finance goal is going to be either loans or investments. Very little money is being talked about in the form of grants, and that's the question developing countries are asking. India has put forth a number that at least $600 billion annually must be in the form of grants. And I must underline the point that when it comes to adaptation, which means preparing for climate impacts or recovering from disasters, you cannot expect poor communities and countries to borrow money, because that's an additional cost that they have to pay. And when we talk about loss and damage, I had a house, I lost it, and then you're asking me to take a loan for that.
So let me ask you something. The Biden administration is going out. President Trump has been reelected. He wants to pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement. And you have many people saying, why should we have anything to do with any international organization? And why should the U.S. pay for you or anyone here, their countries, for for their climate problems?
Because the U.S. has caused the problem in the first place. U.S. is responsible for 1/4 of global greenhouse gas emissions cumulatively. And it has benefited most from that fossil fuel-based industrialization. And people in the country are enjoying the fruits of that. So U.S. as a country is liable to pay, and rather the climate debt that they owe to developing countries. It's their responsibility, it's their obligation. And another quarter must come from European Union. That's the reality. So U.S. has to own up the responsibility and pay climate finance to developing countries for mitigation, adaptation, and dealing with loss and damage.
Harjeet, very quickly, you live in Delhi, which is now today the most polluted country, a city in the world. Describe conditions there and why the situation is so bad that schools have been closed and the chief minister has called an emergency, a medical emergency.
I mean, it is an emergency, but I would say it's our own creation. It's the same development model that India has adopted, which the West has been promoting all over the world. And it's the same fossil fuel-based development. There's a lot of commonality between what's happening in Delhi right now because of the high vehicular pollution, because of the industrial use of fossil fuels, and we are stuck with that system. And the AQI is now more than 500. It's a national emergency. My own daughter is studying from home because she's not allowed to go to school. Schools are shut down. And governments need to act. And I think the common part is, how do we move away from fossil fuels, which has caused the climate crisis, which is responsible for the pollution, and that environmental degradation that's happening because of this model has to be questioned. So while pollution remains a local issue, but at the heart of it is the fossil fuel-based development, which we must move away from.
Harjeet Singh is with us. He was with the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty Coalition. We are also joined by other members of civil society from around the world. I'm going to get up right now. They have just come from across this broad room from the Caspian Plenary Hall, where they held a people summit. One of the co-chairs of that summit, which is called Pay Up, Stand Up, Finance Climate Action, Not Genocide, where civil society unfurled the names of Palestinians who've been killed and prayed for the dead. We're joined right now by co-chair. The co-chair is Liddy Nakpal, who is a longtime Filipina climate activist and coordinator with the Asia People Summit on Debt and Development and the global campaign to demand climate justice. Liddy, it's so great to have you with us today. If you can talk about what the point of this plenary was, hundreds of people packed in.
Well, we wanted first to feel our power of solidarity together. So it was a really great opportunity for us to come together in big numbers, such as we've not had in this COP because of the whole layout and the rules. So this was a great celebration of our power together.
I think you should explain more. What is the issue here? Why are there so many silent protests? And explain the rules where you cannot mention a country name. You can't even say where you're from.
Yes, that is one of the rules of the security and the UNFCCC Secretariat. In order to protect, they say, the dignity and to protect respect for the different countries and governments of the country. So we're not allowed to mention governments. There is a policy that we can't name and shame, but apparently that also applies to we can't praise particular governments. So we just can't name any government and we can't even say where we're from. But we have been doing our best to use this space to raise our voices on the critical issues that are being discussed here that affects our lives. And one of that is the genocide that's happening in this world. It's very much a climate issue, as it is an issue of justice, and also the issue of climate finance, which is supposed to be part of the reparations for the climate debt that is owed to our people in the global south.
We're also joined by Jenna Rashid. Jenna Rashid is a climate advocate, a Palestinian based in London.
in Lebanon.
You are wearing a keffiyeh. Yeah. Inside, it was very moving at the beginning of the session, where the names of hundreds, if not thousands, of Palestinians and Lebanese were put on sheets and people unfurled them. Talk about why you're here today and what your message is.
Like, I'm here today, first of all, to amplify the voices of my people in Palestine and Lebanon, to talk about the genocides that are happening, because we can't be here talking about climate justice without mentioning the injustices around the world, because it's also linked with the environment, it's also linked with the ecocides that is happening. Because of the genocide that is currently happening in both Lebanon and Palestine, the soil are being contaminated because of the bombing. The sea is being contaminated also because of the bombing. So we can't be like, we can't have this hypocrisy in the world and be here talking about just transition and climate justice without mentioning these injustices. And we are here as collective Palestinians. There are a collective Palestinian that came up with a campaign called Global Energy Embargo for Palestine, where they are calling countries such as Brazil, South Africa, and Turkey, these countries that claim to support Palestinians, but on the other hand, they are fueling genocide, and they are making the fuels come out from their countries to the occupation. So yeah, we are here demanding to stop fueling genocide, demanding to stop the transportation of the fuel from these countries to the occupation.
We're also joined by another climate activist. We're joined right now by Lina Issa, who is a climate justice advocate from Sudan. If you can talk about why you're here today, what you're trying to accomplish, and what Sudan is facing.
I'm basically here to speak about Sudan because no one here talking about Sudan. We are so neglected. Families are separated. Women got raped, and a lot of children lose their lives according to nothing, literally. And the media is not covering us. No one is speaking about us. There's a genocide happening in there. And my country are blooding. And even like every region in Sudan are neglected, blooding, and also like the media are blind from us, because no one really care about us. I don't know why. Is it because we are black people, but black people life matter? And I'm here today to speak up about Sudan, to speak about the women, children, men, the families, all the families that are separated now. We need to stop this war. We need to defund this genocide right now. A lot of countries are supporting this genocide, but no one else, like no one another, is supporting the Sudanese themselves. Like, there's no safety, security, and all of this. And we are all here calling, like, there's no one here to, like, we are here not like to leave anyone behind, but unfortunately Sudanese people are behind the table, and we are depending on no one literally talking about us.
Lina, I want to thank you so much for standing here and speaking up for your country, for your people. Lina Issa is a climate justice advocate from Sudan. And I want to thank Lydia Nakpil, longtime climate activist and co-chair of the People's Plenary that just take place. She is a Filipina climate activist. And I want to thank Jana Rashid, a climate advocate, Palestinian based in Lebanon. We thank you all for being with us as we wrap up our show today. We only have a few seconds. We want to also thank Harjeet Singh, who came to this summit from New Delhi, India. Thousands of people have gathered. I think it's something like 77,000 people are registered for this UN Climate Summit in Baku, Azerbaijan. Next year, it will take place in Brazil, in the rainforest right on the edge. Well, we want to thank the amazing team of people who helped us today. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Berkty, Nagusra Messiah-Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warrenoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
Did you know the Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, a.k.a. SFPERG, has been leading social and environmental activism on campus for 40 years. SFBIRD is student activism, by students, for students. Do you have a vision for a brighter future? Are you passionate about changing the world? Visit us at www.sfbird.ca. That's www.sfbird.ca to learn more about getting involved today.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.